Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned in to Modus Operandi. Now, ever since the famous Golden Escalator ride down in 2015, when Donald Trump made his first official announcement that he was running for President of the United States, it was the announcement that reshaped political strategy all around the world. This week, we'll explore the so-called Trump effect all around the world. On every continent, in every country, there's at least one politician on a stage somewhere who is compared to Trump. All right, let's get into the MO. After Trump won in 2016, we've seen global imitators, wannabes, and those who subscribe to the so-called Trumpian philosophy of MAGA. Civilians and politicians alike love him, hate him. Trump ushered in a whole new brand of flame-throwing politics. There's the left, there's the right, then there's Trump. From all political camps and ideology, the Trump style has made its mark on how politics are played.
Anything to discuss?
President Trump was a controversial figure. Perhaps no other American president or politician has actually been subjected to as much scrutiny, criticism, and outright condemnation than the 45th president of the United States. But President Trump stoked controversy not only in the U.S. The former president was well known for his criticisms of China. From fears over TikTok corrupting the nation's youth and gathering Americans' data, to calls to end what he referred to as unfair trade deals with the Asian superpower, President Trump made no bones about his views that China was a major threat to domestic security.
If we didn't get hit by the plague from China, this thing, we wouldn't have even, between us, I would have canceled, Mr. Congressman, most of the rallies. I wouldn't have needed a rally. That's a little bit unfair, but that's okay. That's what China's done to our nation. They've screwed us for a long time on a lot of different ways. No, never has anybody ripped off our nation like China. And I've taken in billions and billions of dollars. We never took in 10 cents from China. And I gave $28 billion, right? $28 billion to the farmers because they were targeted unfairly by China.
Then there was NATO. President Trump continually berated member countries in the transatlantic military alliance for not paying their fair share, a minimum 2% of their national GDP, into supporting the bloc. According to Trump, he successfully convinced several nations in the alliance to increase their military spending. But despite the president's near constant attacks on foreign nations that he viewed as treating the U.S. unfairly, many leaders throughout the world have actually been compared to Trump, and in some ways, kind of sought to emulate him. In Europe alone, there's no shortage. For example, Hungary's Viktor Orban has been compared to Trump. The small Central European country's leader has ridden that wave of populist Christian nationalism in his own country, seeking to reduce migration and placing emphasis on the historical values of the Hungarian people. He even tweeted criticism when Trump was banned from Twitter. More recently, Giorgia Meloni in Italy, she's been compared to number 45. Her aggressive rhetoric against illegal immigration of African migrants across the Mediterranean from Libya has also been compared to Trump's work to build the border wall along America's southern border. Outside of Europe, there's no shortage of examples. Take Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro, once called the Trump of the tropics for his nationalist pro-Christian agenda. Critics say both leaders were unwilling to accept losses in their most recent electoral defeats. Let's head over to Asia. Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi's version of Hindu nationalism, and his good relations with Donald Trump have come to attention of many mainstream media outlets. And then who can forget the sometimes harsh rhetoric of the former president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, when it came to cracking down on violence and drug crime on his island nation? So it seems whatever you think of Donald Trump, plenty of leaders around the world have something in common with, if not just outright imitating his style of leadership. And as we know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
So who better to discuss the global Trump effect than a former politician during the Trump years? Dr. Karin Kneisel is the former foreign minister of Austria, now an energy analyst and academic. Dr. Kneisel, thank you for being with us. So for decades, Donald Trump had, you know, kind of flirted with the idea of wading into politics. Nobody took him seriously in 2015 because he had toyed with the idea for so long. Most people thought it was another publicity stunt. But then he actually ran and then actually won. Analyze Donald Trump's influence on the world of politics for us. What sort of impact or impression has he made on the landscape?
Donald Trump is a self-made businessman. He has a completely different attitude to politics than those personalities, those predecessors of him, successors who have done the typical cursus of going through politics. And that makes him different. He's not living from politics as proper business, but he has been making his career, his professional life, his personal life also by his own means. And that makes the difference.
Now, prior to the U.S. 2016 presidential elections, globally, politicians were labeled far right or far left or other generic terms. Now, people are called Trumpian. Donald Trump is used as a barometer or a scale on which we measure someone's politics. Now, look at Brazil's outgone president, Jair Bolsonaro. He was called Trump of the Tropics. What does being Trumpian mean to you?
I would say, as a far distant observer, as somebody who is really not into political sciences of contemporary U.S. Politics, it's hardcore Republican, maybe. For the Midwest, for people who felt marginalized, and this might be one approach. But honestly, when you would like to insist on a term like Trumpist or being Trumpian, this is nothing specific to the U.S. It's nothing specific to the person of Donald Trump, because when I refer, for instance, to a personality like Charles de Gaulle, the Gaullist is a proper political party. It's a very important party. And this is nothing specific to the U.S. On the contrary, you will find it in many countries. Look at the family of Nehru and Indira Gandhi, his daughter. The Congress Party. I mean, you will find it in many huge democracies, whether it's India, whether it's France, that political personalities have had their imprint with their name on a political party or on a movement.
Do you think other right-leaning politicians look to Donald Trump as, I don't know, some sort of example or use him perhaps as subject matter to study and attempt to emulate for their own careers, such as the tactics that he used to come to power?
No, I don't think so, because when you take, for instance, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban or Benjamin Netanyahu, the again Israeli Prime Minister, both politicians, both heads of government, have in the past and will most probably also in the future align themselves with Donald Trump once more. But their cursus as politicians is so different. Their historic and political circumstances differ profoundly from what a U.S. president is. So I don't think that such an analogy makes sense.
All right, Dr. Kneisel, don't go anywhere. She is staying with us, and so should you. Coming up next, Justin Trudeau, Emmanuel Macron. They're the cool kids in the politics club, but some would compare them to the movie Mean Girls. Find out why when we return. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
To counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back to the MO. Dr. Corinne Kneisel, the former foreign minister of Austria, has graciously stuck around to talk to us some more. Dr. Kneisel, thank you for being with us. So what other politicians in history can you think of, for better or worse, who have had a similar impact on the global stage?
Well, as I just mentioned beforehand, Charles de Gaulle, he was quite a personality, and given the fact that he was the leader of the French resistance during World War II, and he was also the one who established the Franco-German tandem in the 1960s in terms of reconciliation between Germans and French, he definitely has left an imprint. And I've studied this personality for quite a while, having been educated in France. But it would be now difficult to really do fair play to all the those who left a tremendous imprint. And having mentioned India beforehand, of course, somebody like Mahatma Gandhi has to be mentioned, and the list is long. So it's really difficult to number them, and it would most probably sound a little bit Eurocentric if I just mention Charles de Gaulle and leave out all the others. So the list would be long, and I could imagine we would spend hours in the evening to really be fair to all those who had their tremendous share in shaping at least the international relations of the last century.
While there are many who embrace Trumpism or Donald Trump himself, there's probably an equal number of those who reject Trumpism and the man as well. Now, we saw back in the 2017 G20 summit, where Emmanuel Macron and Justin Trudeau and others were sort of making fun of him. He was sort of the outcast or outsider. Can you examine for us why so many reject Trump, including other world leaders?
This is just bad manners, the way they acted. I remember very well their behavior in those situations, because it's on a global stage, what counts in the end is that there is also some sort of chemistry passing between personalities, and they might differ profoundly in their character, in their ideological view of the world, perception of the world, and still you can get along with each other. And this is what it is all about, to have a respectful and professional, pragmatic interaction. So if you just consider yourself as superior to somebody else because that somebody else is having a different approach, it's not full in international relations. In the end, good manners and respect contribute a lot.
All right, so you say declining diplomatic relations actually comes from declining social manners.
I think it's has led to this coma, maybe even silent death, that diplomacy has gone through. And I was a junior diplomat in the late 80s and early 1990s, and I still had the pleasure to work for ambassadors who were talented. And talent is a lot. It's not only about the education. For everything in life, you need a certain portion of talent. And we have a lot of untalented diplomats right now. And I always said the further I went to the East, the better I was received. I mean, it might sound superficial, but I consider it as important that you are kindly received a bouquet of flowers as a lady. You receive more than just a cold coffee, but maybe you're even invited for lunch or a dinner. And this makes a difference. It makes a difference. And I've seen a much higher degree of professional and also how should I put it? Not only professional, but also this human touch that you need, you know, that there is a true conversation evolving between people. We are not algorithms. We are still people with all our senses, and you have to grasp in the moment you are sitting down with your counterpart also, how does your counterpart feel today? And are you really supposed to go through all the talking points? Are you really supposed to have this or that element included in the conversation? Maybe you better skip it because your counterpart is just passing through a tremendous domestic problem or has had a personal loss. So all that counts, and we are humans in our conversation and our approaches. And to come back to Donald Trump, I think he had that, or he still has it. I mean, he's still around.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference. And from my far distant observation, for me, Donald Trump is a child of his time, of his society. I mean, he is... he's very much a New Yorker. If I see also, I think you have the New York lens behind you. He's much more a New Yorker than he is a Washingtonian. And that also makes a difference. And I always said Donald Trump, in my eyes, has a lot of instinct, or he has got instinct. I mean, he has the right instinct to identify the fundamentals of a certain issue. But maybe he lacks tactics and strategy. So, for that, you also need good people, a cabinet. He brought in many members of his family to support him in that. Whether this was a good choice or not, it's not up to me to judge it. No, it's up to the American electorate. But he's a man of instincts, and he is a man of his time, his generation. And I think... he brought into the U.S. establishment a lot of new edges. And he's not this kind of fish that passes through. He's much more a character, and that makes a difference.
There are many around the world who say Trump was the shock into the world of politics that it needed. Interpret that as you wish. Would you agree? Was his style of politics not only shocking, but ultimately, do you think it was helpful or harmful to statecraft?
This is a very tough question because it's too early to judge all that, you know. We are certainly in a time of very swift developments, but to really judge is time of 2017 to 2020, we'll see how he will decide after the midterms next week. Will he pronounce his comeback as a presidential candidate? It's still too early to say what imprint Donald Trump will leave on statecraft in the long run. But he definitely brought a lot of fresh air into the Washingtonian establishment.
Outside of strictly politics, what is or has been the Trump effect on society writ large?
I would say on society, his impact was that a huge portion of the U.S. electorate in the Midwest that felt marginalized, people who didn't register for elections anymore, were mobilized again and had somehow the feeling that there's somebody now in Washington who represents them. It's not East Coast, West Coast, it's not the big cities, it's not the big universities, it's not the think tanks, but there was this self-made, not fully self-made, because he had inherited also a lot from his father and grandfather, but to a large extent, nevertheless, a businessman who has made his fortune and who wanted to do politics for his very personal convictions. And this, if you want, is a kind of also old style approach, because to do politics as a business and to be a professional politician is a rather recent development, both in the US and also in many parliaments on the old continent. But here, Donald Trump most probably made an impact, and maybe there's also a change in terms of choosing candidates in the long run in many other countries, because we see that the crisis of political parties losing their real mission. I mean, as you asked at the very beginning of our conversation, the traditional characterization of political parties, it's gone a long time ago. It's gone because there's not any more the left or the right as we had in the beginning of 20th century. And maybe Donald Trump introduced the comeback, the return of political personalities, of characters.
Dr. Karin Kneißl, former foreign minister of Austria, thank you so much for this enlightening peek behind the curtain of politics and statecraft. And that is going to do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.